This time, we're taking a shrunken down look at the MCU's Ant-Man. And along the way, we ask, would you want to wear the Yellow Jacket suit or the Ant-Man suit? What kind of fountain of youth is Paul Rudd drinking from? And why is the MCU so serious? Baskin-Robbins always finds out on this edition of Force-Fed Sci-Fi. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Force-Fed Sci-Fi podcast. I am one of your hosts, Chris Rupp, and I am joined by my friend and co-host.
I am the Shawn Michael Culp.
Oh, my.
Oh, hey, George Takei. How are you doing today?
I am doing just well, Sean. It is so great to see you.
It's really great to see you, too.
Oh.
George.
Hello, William. I haven't seen you since that roast on Comedy Central all those years ago.
You still didn't invite me to your wedding. Why didn't you invite me to your wedding?
We didn't think, Brad and I didn't think you would get it.
You know who his husband is?
Yeah. George Takei is actually a good follow on Instagram.
He is a good follow. His YouTube is always pretty funny.
But besides the point, today on the podcast, we are talking about 2015's Ant-Man, starring the youthful Paul Rudd. I don't know how that man is 50 years old and looks like he does.
Well,
I don't know what sacrifices he's making or what virgins he's eating, but still, he looks great for his age. So anyway.
Yeah, he does. Holy smokes. I know. I'm looking at like the 45-year-old version of him. And
he looks unchanged from when he did Clueless in 1995.
Maybe he just wears makeup all the time.
I don't know.
Or he's got someone that just...
He's just super chill, like Matthew McConaughey.
He's never angry.
Right.
He does Lincoln commercials on
his spare time. I think Matthew McConaughey has to reach into such a dark place to tap into his anger, and I think Paul Rudd is the same person.
When he's not drinking Wild Turkey whiskey.
Right.
That's funny. So, Ant-Man.
So, quick synopsis, on Ant-Man. When burglar Scott Lang is released from prison, he's desperate to get his life back on track in order to see his estranged daughter. So much so that he falls back in with his old crew and takes a job that leads him to a reclusive scientist's home that only offers a mysterious suit with amazing shrinking abilities. Scott then joins up with the scientist and a beautiful compatriot in order to prevent the shrinking technology from falling into the wrong hands.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
So, there's stuff that happens. And shrinking happens.
Shrinking happens.
But not growing. Well,
yeah,
I guess.
You shrink and then you grow. That's kind of how that works.
You shrink and you grow.
I mean, did you ever see Honey, I Shrunk the Kids? Like, yeah, that's how that works.
No, but I did see an episode of Seinfeld where they talked about shrinkage.
Boy. I think that's a different shrinkage. So anyway, Ant-Man is directed by Peyton Reed, who the saga of... of who was in the director's chair. I mean, you could pretty much do a podcast all on that. But Edgar Wright, director of Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End, was originally attached to write and direct this film.
But what happened?
He'd been attached since 2003, but in 2014, he left the project for unknown reasons.
What?
I mean, the cookie cutter phrase is creative differences.
Why is it always that whenever Disney doesn't like someone, they just say creative differences?
They wanted a yes man, and Edgar Wright isn't a yes man.
No, he is not. So they ended up getting Peyton Reed.
Peyton Reed.
And he is the yes man.
Yeah, and oddly enough, he also directed a movie called Yes Man.
Oh, my God. That's why Disney... They just Googled Yes Man. Oh, here we go. But I don't want to poo-poo too much. They did use the
Yes Man is actually a pretty funny movie.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I like Jim Carrey with that. And it's, you know, Ant-Man based on the comics by Stan Lee.
Yes, the late, great Stan Lee, along with Steve Ditko, created the character. And starring Paul Rudd as Scott Lang / Ant-Man. And for fans who are familiar with the comic book character, you'll know that Scott Lang is only a secondary character to wield the Ant-Man name. The original Ant-Man, Dr. Hank Pym, played by Michael Douglas in the film, also an original Avenger in the comics storyline.
Oh.
Michael Douglas, his first appearance on the show, really.
Yeah.
The son of late great legendary actor Kirk Douglas, and his son Michael is legendary in his own right. Mm-hmm. There isn't too much we can say about Mr. Douglas's legacy that hasn't already been spoken for.
Oh, I think they did a really good job in getting a veteran actor. Because I think the MCU, I don't know if they keep, if they've been doing that, but usually, like with Iron Man, they got Jeff Bridges. Captain America, they got Tommy Lee Jones. You know, there's always, for these origin films, it's like someone that's, you know, pretty new or common, respected, and then they get a nice veteran Academy Award type of guy to help bolster the, I guess, what could you say, the respectability of the film?
Yeah, that too. And him and Paul Rudd just have great chemistry together throughout the film.
Well, they're both great actors. I mean, this film is peppered with great actors. You got Michael Pena. You've got frickin', what's that guy? Corey Stoll, the villain.
He's playing Darren Cross.
He's so underrated. I don't even think he's been nominated for an Academy Award.
No, he is not.
But he's great. He's gotten a Golden Globe and he's great. I mean, I loved every second he was on the screen. But who's our female?
We get Hope Van Dyne, who Evangeline Lilly.
Oh, Evangeline Lilly. Oh, that's not too hard to say.
No.
I wanted to say like Evanescence.
This is why we leave the pronunciations to yours truly.
But we did have...
Sean's in the army, I think. So we kind of give him a pass on his pronunciation difficulties.
We do have one of my favorite... Well, not my favorite hip-hop artist, but T.I.'s in it.
Yeah, he's great in this movie. In the brief time he's in this film, he is so funny.
Yes, have you seen the film Takers?
I have not.
Paul Walker.
No.
Oh, so it's like a movie about robbers, but you're right. Oh, they take things. And T.I., that was his debut, and he was horrible in that film. But I'm happy in 5 years he's really become his own.
Well, that whole crew of Michael Pena and David Dasmalchian.
How the heck do you pronounce that,
dude? I read a lot,
so I read a lot of Bukowski. You don't see me like pronounce.
Do you read other authors' oeuvres?
Sometimes.
And that's a no.
Chuck Palahniuk.
Okay. Do you read anything that's not like
weird,
like I hate the world type of ramblings?
No.
There you go. We also get Judy Greer in the film. She's playing Scott's estranged ex-wife.
Yeah.
And Bobby Cannavale as Jim Paxton.
I feel like I've seen him in something.
He's been in a lot. He was on Boardwalk Empire. I think he was on Vinyl, a couple HBO shows.
No, but...
He was in the Jon Favreau self-indulgent film, Chef.
Oh, that's where it is. And he was in The Irishman. Yeah. Okay, so that's where I've seen...
Right,
like,
but we don't have
face.
To see The Irishman.
No, we don't. I'll leave your bitterness to yourself.
But of course, since it's a Marvel film, you also get a Stan Lee cameo at the end of the film as a bartender.
But they didn't even use his own voice. And I feel like that's like half the battle with Stan Lee. If you can't even get that nice drawl that he has.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because Stan Lee just loved doing those cameos anyway. So,
oh, yeah, I'm sure they paid him.
I don't think he cared.
No, he didn't. He just wanted to act. I feel like there's a lot of people in this film that was just like, blink and you'll miss them.
Right.
Because I know they cast that one chick, Haley Lovett? And she's like a non-speaking cameo for the wife of Janet Van Dyne, whatever, because of her Michelle Pfeiffer eyes. And then they end up casting Michelle Pfeiffer to be freaking Hank's wife.
Yeah, but that's outside of the scope of today's show.
That is outside. Just a little trivia there for you guys.
Right. But no concrete budget information that I could find. I saw anywhere from $130 million to $170 million, which
is just crazy.
Which really tracks for the other films in the MCU, given how freaking lavish and extravagant they can be at times.
Do you know how many homeless people could like have jobs and food for this freaking money that we pump into these films? Just saying. But on a lighter note, did you know that Howard Stern tried to buy the film.
I saw that in one of the weirder things I've had to research for this show. Howard Stern trying to buy the rights for Ant-Man.
What the heck? Why? Do you think Ant-Man would have had a perm?
Yeah, and it would have been weird. Yeah, I know. Yeah, Howard Stern looks like Weird Al's cousin.
I know. He just never got over the perm, man. Still rocking it. But that's so. I wonder. I'm sure if you Google on YouTube, someone's asked him. Like, why'd you try to buy the rights? Were you gonna make a movie?
I think that's one of those like drunken things that he was talked into by one of somebody in his inner circle. Like, hey, you know what would be great is if you bought the rights to a comic book hero. He's like, oh really? What one? And it's like Ant-Man. He could shrink,
And
get big. Like, really? What part? Knowing Howard Stern. Yeah, but then Edgar Wright comes along to. He signed a deal to write and direct an adaptation, and he really wanted to create a story centered around Scott Lang and him being a burglar and a not so nice individual. Because in the comics, he is a scumbag of the highest order.
Cheats on his wife, beats his wife, drinks himself to death. Like, actually robs people. Isn't like hidden, like Disney-fied altruistic. He robbed the rich to give to the poor. No, like he was a selfish prick.
Yeah. And Wright's screenplay does largely make it in the film, but it had to be modified in order to be included in the MCU.
It's just kind of sad because it seems like he started this in like 2003. So it almost maybe was like his passion project. And then Disney was like, you either do what we say or we let you leave with creative differences. But they did give him a writing credit.
Right.
So I'm sure he got royalties.
They also gave Paul Rudd a writing credit too.
Oh, I'm sure with all the improvised dialogue that Paul
when Wright left the project, they briefly considered Adam McKay to fill in the director's chair, but he opted not to, but he did do screen work with Paul Rudd.
Oh.
So I think it was mostly just tweaking Wright's screenplay to fit it in the MCU and probably punch up the dialogue and make it funnier a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, and then this happens all the time in Hollywood. There's always script doctors that come on set and work on things.
Oh, yeah. And most of like the legendary actors of their, you know, like I know Harrison Ford's known for tinkering with the scripts, like for all of his Indiana Jones movies. He's like, that's not what I say.
Right.
I say that. So, I mean, I feel like they picked a good source because Paul Rudd is probably arguably the funnier guy of the 2010s, early, mid 2000s.
Just such a wide range from Paul Rudd.
Yes. Yes. No one, I don't think anyone thought he was going to be a superhero.
No. I mean, and when, I will admit, when I heard that Paul Rudd was going to be Ant-Man, I was hesitant to see it.
Right.
And then I heard all the reviews coming afterward. I'm like, hey, I'll go see Ant-Man. Sure. It sounds funny.
Well, it's like you just got to look at it as he's not Scott, he's Paul Rudd wearing an Ant-Man suit, because I don't think Paul Rudd has the range to like show. He doesn't seem like a character outside of Paul Rudd to me. So if you think of it like that, it's pretty funny and, you know, it works. He's got some of the best lines, I think, in the MCU so far.
Right. He has his moments. It's fun to watch him fanboy when he's around Captain America or Tony Stark or Hulk or all the other Avengers he comes across. Because
mm-hmm.
as you see him in the sequel, we won't talk too much about it today, but he affectionately refers to Steve Rogers as Cap.
Yes.
And people are looking at him like, why are you calling him Cap? You hung out with him one time.
I think it's like Paul Rudd, like most comedians just like have that commitment element that like a professionally trained actor that isn't a comedian doesn't have. It's like Will Ferrell, his timing and just his ability to play really any role and have a straight face is just non-parallel, you know, no one can cross that man. And I think Paul Rudd is just one of those two where...
Well, now that we have seen Paul Rudd in four MCU films, including two Ant-Man films, it's hard to imagine anybody else in the role.
Oh, yeah. It's like, what's that guy? Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk.
Right.
You know, you forget there were two guys before the Hulk.
Right.
But he just really personified it, and now that's the face we see.
Right.
And I think though... See, he does do that with this role. He really owns it as Ant-Man, despite, you know, basically being Paul Rudd wearing a costume, but it's silly.
It's interesting to look at this film and when it comes out in terms of the overall timeline of the MCU, This comes out in 2015, supposedly after the events of Avengers Age of Ultron. And really, the other Avengers aren't, with the exception of Sam Wilson slash the Falcon, are kind of mentioned, but not really. I mean, it's very easy to separate this film from the larger storyline.
Yeah, I don't know why, because I was like thinking about the Falcon during like Age of Ultron and all that stuff. But I don't know if they did that intentionally.
I think adding, if you put Captain America in it, it no longer is an Ant-Man film. It's a Captain America film.
Well, yeah, and you also have to pay Chris Evans' salary.
But Chris Evans is worth it, but...
For a little cameo.
Yeah, but it's Chris Evans. You saw Knives Out.
That is true. Chris Evans has gotten much better in his career.
But I think if this were a bigger tentpole action film like we saw later with Civil War or Thor Ragnarok...
Even Iron Man.
Yeah, even Iron Man to a lesser extent. I think it would not be as easy to separate Ant-Man from the larger story. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to see the Ant-Man films kind of become these self-contained stories within that large arc.
Definitely. Well, I think they did that just to play it safe, just in case the film does, for some reason, bomb or not gross as much. So they're like, all right, we're not going to have too many ties. You know, kind of like how Doctor Strange, they're now making a sequel, but it's been so long. Whereas if, you know, the film didn't work, then at least they could be like, well, here we go. We tried, Ant-Man. You know, you're just not that compelling of a character. But as we found out, it worked and people really liked the film.
I know people were hoping for an Ant-Man adaptation earlier because Ant-Man was an original Avenger, and then obviously 2012 rolled around and they're all looking like, hey, where's Ant-Man?
Mm-hmm. But you know, you can't put the cart before the horse.
Right. Like the Rolling Stones said, you can't always get what you want.
Exactly. And it would be too much, I think, if they would have done more than like the few Avengers that they started with.
Now, Ant-Man showed up at the right time in the MCU, didn't really break any new ground or expanded anything super duper until we get to Endgame, where we find out, hey, time travel's possible with the use of the quantum realm. Granted, right. The giant man showing up in Civil War was funny. Awesome.
It was so funny. And in Ant-Man the Wasp. I mean, he's just so funny, man. Paul Rudd's laugh as the mega Ant-Man. It's just, every time I see that scene, I just cry of laughter.
He brings this realistic aspect to the MCU, the MCU's characters, because they're all these larger-than-life, unattainable, unrelatable figures, and yet Paul Rudd...
He's the most relatable.
Right, because he doesn't have special powers. He just has... The suit is the powers.
Yeah, he feels like just a random guy that just stumbled on, you know? The suit, he's like, oh my god, I can do this. Whoa.
Like, he's able to hang beating up Spider-Man and Black Widow and all those other guys, but it's the suit, really, that gives him all those powers.
Exactly. That's why his character, I think, is the funniest. And soon, I mean, I think his character gets fleshed out more through the MCU than this film, but he becomes more relatable on, like, that human perspective, you know, where it's like, oh, he serves as the... what would you call that? The person that the audience looks through and can relate to.
The conduit.
The conduit, yes.
Well, and he's the first character that we get that starts off having a family. We see him with his ex-wife and his daughter while they've moved on with their lives. He hasn't. He's just starting off fresh out of prison. He has no job. Briefly fired from Baskin Robbins because Baskin Robbins always finds out.
Which, a little, though, to say... if you do have a master's degree in whatever he had, like chemical engineering, if you do go to jail for that and you were so successful in your past, you're probably going to get hired
right somewhere.
You're not going to get fired from Baskin.
You just got to beef up that LinkedIn profile just saying like, oh, I took a 3-year sabbatical to really find
That's
myself.
Right. But I mean, yeah, it's not.
I also learned how to make a shiv out of a melted plastic bag.
You're not going to have to resort to Baskin Robbins for a career.
in dealing with pissant customers who show up to an ice cream place looking for a hot pretzel.
So stupid. But
that guy was a jerk.
They got their, I guess, product price placement for that.
Well, every film in the MCU is guilty of product placement.
Is it?
Yeah.
I they're so like No offense, but to me, I never remember.
You pay attention. I mean, it's certainly not as... I mean, in the mid-2000s, product placement was rampant.
Oh, my God.
Especially if you like look at some of James Bond films like Die Another Day or Casino Royale. There is product placement all over the freaking place.
And we got Dunkin' Donuts or Baskin Robbins.
Right.
Which I guess it did its job.
Not my first choice for ice cream, though, if I'm being honest, in the Midwest.
What's your first choice?
Dairy Queen.
Dairy Queen?
Dairy Queen.
Why Dairy Queen?
Dairy Queen's the best.
Oh, I might actually do Culver's.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm bougie.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
You got the money to spend at Culver's.
Yeah, or Mariano's gets some gelato. But nonetheless.
I do have to say this does Ant-Man presents some interesting uses of technology in the film. Along with the exosuits in Iron Man, like the shrinking tech and talking to animals. And like, I got to thinking as I was watching this, like, all right, I got to find out more about if the shrinking tech is plausible, because that just looks so cool.
Oh, yeah. And?
And turns out shrinking is kind of impossible.
It's impossible? Yeah. We can't figure... Ah, oh, that sucks.
There's a professor at Gonzaga University, Eric Aver, who notes that our atoms would have to shrink, or we need to be made of less atoms to shrink like Ant-Man. So
they can't just like take them out.
Right. To put it scientifically, atoms don't shrink due to the distance between the protons and the neutrons that make up the nucleus. So even if you could shrink to something the size of an ant, your atoms would be so dense that begin to even sink into the Earth.
Oh, that's crazy. Okay. So this is never going to happen.
Right. And he did know while removing atoms is possible, there is a limit. Mm-hmm. Aver did said, if you made a castle out of 1,000,000 Legos, you might be able to shrink it down to something that looks like the same with 1,000 Legos, but there is a limit. Mm-hmm. And another issue is also scaling down the biological systems from the air you breathe to the food you eat. So shrinking your lungs negatively impacts the oxygen that your body can process.
Well, yeah. I mean, that I saw online was a criticism of the giant ant that ends up getting bigger. Like, it wouldn't survive because it didn't have lungs.
Right.
And, you know, the exoskeleton wouldn't be able to handle that. So.
Well, and if you shrank down, too, you would still have to eat the same amount of calories as you would as if you were full size.
That's crazy.
You would pretty much have to eat your body weight on a daily basis just to boost your metabolic rate.
So you're saying that movie with Matt Damon where he shrinks down in order to save the world from climate change and, you know, food?
I have not seen Downsizing.
Okay. It's not probably accurate. It's probably, not a viable.
Probably not. It certainly looks cool on screen. No one is saying it doesn't, but it's just not scientifically possible.
And the box office has spoken with that bomb.
You know, he's okay, though. He's got Jason Bourne money. He's got Ford versus Ferrari money. It's all good.
But can he talk to animals?
I looked this up, too, because it's fascinating that he's able to use those electromagnetic waves to communicate with animals. But the real science behind it isn't as, you know, just simple as using electromagnetic waves. So right now, the big deal is being able to translate what dogs are saying.
Oh, God.
So it wouldn't be like the collars you see in Up or like alpha, beta, blah, 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 ball. The scientists are using AI to help figure out what dogs are saying. Hmm. What dogs are, or should I say, barking.
Yeah.
What they're barking about in a study that's actually sponsored by Amazon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Amazon's getting in on this whole like, what's your dog saying? Because we want those dog orders from Amazon.
It's because so many people found out that Amazon doesn't pay taxes and how much money Jeff Bezos pays. So they're like, screw you, Amazon. He's like, hey, let me put my money towards things to benefit people.
See? I will say Chris Rock had a great joke about Jeff Bezos at the Oscars when he said, this man got divorced and he's still the richest man in the world.
That's true, man.
But there's a doctor at Northern Arizona University, Dr. Khan Slobachikov. He's been studying prairie dogs for over 30 years and is convinced they utilize a unique language and believes that their methods can easily be applied to dogs.
Why don't we just work on apes? They can do sign language. I mean, why don't we teach an ape how to explain what they're saying into words using the alphabet? And then we figured out, boom, we could talk to apes.
I don't know. I didn't look that up. But Dr. Slobodchikov, he developed an algorithm that can translate the prairie dog's vocalizations.
Okay.
And this algorithm is in the early stages for dogs, but experts estimate that a translator could be available within the next decade.
For what? But how?
I want to know what my dog is saying. There are There are millions of pet owners out there who want to know what their dog is saying.
You're telling me we have to figure out what the tone, we have to match what a bark is to a letter and figure out that the let.
Well, I don't think it would be for a specific letter. It might be for a phrase or a word or associating it with different behaviors. Like if your dog goes woo, like I'm hungry, and that might translate to I'm hungry, give me food, or woo, like I'm lonely, pet me or something.
But see, I feel like you already figured it out. This isn't like rocket science.
My dog just snuggles all the time, so I don't know whenever it wants pets, because it just snuggles on its own volition.
Maybe she's happy.
Right. My dog's just always happy.
That's right. So that's a good pet owner, see? Wouldn't you snuggle all the time if you were that happy, Chris?
I don't know.
Well, maybe you're just not that happy.
I don't know. I've never been happy.
So it's not where the technology is developing, but it isn't there yet. But we're getting there.
So yeah, unfortunately, Ant-Man kind of is
ahead of its time.
Yeah. Sort of.
From a technological standpoint. What else is in this film? It's a heist film.
Yeah.
They take a page out of Danny Ocean's 11.
You know, I recently had this conversation with my girlfriend. I told her I'd never seen any of the Ocean's 11 Ocean's films, and she went, "What? Like, why haven't you seen them?" Like, 'cause I just didn't get around to them.
I mean,
it's not from a desire of not wanting to. It's just I
never got around to
never them. Saw them.
I mean, you know.
Plus, I never considered the Ocean's films to be like any sort of great bastion of cinema, you know?
I mean, it's just like it's a conglomerate of famous actors that all have about 10 minutes each of screen time and tell jokes and do a heist. So if you like heist films and...
Isn't Matt Damon in those two?
Oh, yeah.
Matt Damon's getting a lot of love today some reason.
It's Matt Damon, George Clooney, and Brad Pitt.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's a pretty nice trio there, you know? You got a couple guys. But the second one's doo-doo stew. The first one and the third one are pretty okay.
Oh, maybe I'll see them one day. It's just they're not on my list right now. But I do like how Ant-Man largely plays out, at least in the first act and part of the second act, like a heist film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get the motif of the guy who's hard on his luck, wants to make a quick buck. You have the diverse crew that everybody's got their specialty.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
They're all great together, I got to say, again.
I was trying to understand what specialty these guys have, because the guy with the crazy last name.
Desmalchian?
Yeah, that guy. His
character is Kurt in the film. Just call him Kurt.
Kurt. The Kurt, he was like the computer nerd, but like, what did T.I. and Michael Pena do? I'm like, I feel like Michael Pena.
I think T.I. is
the driver.
I think he's the driver.
And then Michael, I feel like he just knows people.
Michael Pena is the infiltrator / distractor, whereas Scott Lang's the actual thief.
Right. So it's
like, so it's like this, right?
I just feel like it's so complicated between them where it doesn't have to be that complicated.
You've seen heist films. Like, you know every guy's got their specialty, though.
Yes, yes. Which, those were the best moments. But when the film starts out, it's just Scott doing all the work. I'm like, WTF, man. Why is he doing all the work? Why is he giving him a cut?
Well, and they're trying to get him back into the life. But Scott wants to stay on the straight and narrow. He wants to see his daughter. And then when he realizes it's going to be a while because he doesn't have any money, it's like, I want to make a quick buck. I want to steal some stuff.
And then he finds out it's just a suit. But it was all under the control of Hank.
Yeah, Hank Pym, the puppet master / ant master.
Ooh, the Wizard of Oz. Ooh.
What's behind the curtain, Scott?
It's Hank Pym. I would say, though, that was the coolest. The cool scenes were him like figuring out a way to break into the old safe, the new safe, jumping around. And then that whole sequence of him trying on the suit.
I did look up to see if you could use those burglar tricks. And it turns out you really can't.
No, there's no way.
No, the producers that don't want to give anybody a blueprint for breaking into someone's home.
Well, yeah, it's Disney.
Yeah.
That's probably why the director got fired initially, because he was going to use real tactics.
No, I want to show people how to use a lockpick. You can't do that, Edgar.
But it's good skills that you could use for your life.
But you can't do that, Edgar.
But I... You're fired. Get out of here, Edgar.
Well, it's like on Breaking Bad. They didn't want to give anybody a blueprint for actually making meth. So, yeah, they left out all that.
Well, that's meth. There's a big difference from showing someone how to lockpick and meth.
Well,
meth ruins lives. Lockpick just...
Yeah, but if you're burglaring someone's house...
Well, I'm not saying you have to burglar someone, but you've had a
cabinet
that you can't open
up. Are you seriously debating the merits between making meth and breaking into someone's home for the purposes of burglary?
Absolutely. Oh, do I have to ask the smoking angry French cow to be on my side here?
No, the cow is not on your side either. We don't get involved in American matters.
Go have another
Your
bag.
Criminal justice system needs reform. Moo. And angry smoking French cow out.
Yeah, well, fair enough. The angry smoking cow has spoken.
Right. Its word is final.
It's probably in a nude beach somewhere.
When you have an angry smoking French cow that tells you that your criminal justice system needs reform, I think you might want to get on that.
That's right.
And it's just hanging out at some nude farm somewhere.
Throwing chairs at
waiting for an equally angry French farmer to come get its milk.
And a baguette.
It's like, why does this milk taste like smoke? Wow, this show's off the rails today.
Oh, man. Woo. So how is Disney's stance on the technology depicted?
If I do have to level one major criticism against the film, it is that it does not take a stance either way for condoning or condemning the shrinking tech shown in the film.
Mm-hmm. Which is a big change from the movie we reviewed last week about time travel. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like anti-time travel in this. It's kind of like, it's a thing.
Really, every film we've talked about on the show so far has taken a stance either way. Either, like, even Looper is an anti-time travel film.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park doesn't condone the cloning technology used in the film because, as we see, it goes horribly awry. I mean, really, WALL-E is one of the few films that kind of extols the merits of space travel.
Mm-hmm. It's a happy...
But it's a happy film. It's Pixar. That's what we come to expect from those films. I mean, yes. If it doesn't make us cry, they're not doing their jobs, quite frankly.
But this film, I would say that it... I don't know why... Well, you think it's Disney?
I think Disney has this habit of whitewashing their characters and whitewashing the message they're trying to get across in their films.
Well, yeah. That's like the tough argument where people say the movies are for kids, you know, because they don't want to take a stance to piss off anyone because then they lose stock money and their toys revenue, you know, right? So the opportunity for boycotting. So instead they make films where there is no stance, and I feel... It kind of takes away from the film itself.
Yeah, their 2019 films only made like $5 billion. I don't think they have to worry anything about stock returns.
Exactly. So that's my question is, then why don't they put stances in their films, you know? Make it a little, instead of like Star Wars subverting expectations, just tell us what you think about, you know, shrinking.
And I think we're seeing Disney lean into these stories now with the Infinity Saga ending, it gives them a chance to really scale down the characters and the stories and really tell an engaging message. And, you know, we have Black Widow coming up in a couple of months where there's three female leads, for God's sake. Blah! I'm sure all the men in Hollywood are freaking out. Three female leads, what are we going to do?
Ah!
And we have the Eternals coming out later this year where it's a very diverse cast. And also the first depiction of an openly gay superhero as well as a deaf superhero. So that's a big deal. Also Shang-Chi coming out next year with an all-Asian cast, Asian crew. What? So I think the MCU and Disney is starting to make these thoughtful choices in their stories.
Well, it's like, is the thoughtfulness at the surface level where it's just, hey, we're checking a category? Or is it actually going into like showing really human emotions and like conflict changes. And because I feel like that's the problem with some films where it's just like a check mark, you know, look at us, how woke we are. But the film doesn't resonate to everyone on different levels. And I feel like if you're going to make art and move people and actually have something to say, good art changes, challenges, and hits people in different areas. So that's why I'm a little worried. Not worried, but like when it's like all that stuff, it really doesn't, I don't care.
Oh, it's absolutely checking a box. And I said this before we started recording. Every film in the MCU with maybe like two or three exceptions, it's a whole bunch of saccharin that's coated around a tiny bit of substance.
So you have to dig deep.
You got to dig deep for that substance. It's substance / spectacle is what it is. It's largely the spectacle wrapped around the substance.
I guess, and that is honestly my only, pretty much all my criticisms levied towards these films, where it's just there's nothing, you really don't, there is no themes, I feel like, in this film at least, where you can't really take anything home. It's just something where, like my buddy says, it's something to have on in the background that you occasionally look up and laugh at because, you know, you don't have to follow it so closely. You can look up at any time and know where you are. It's like, you know, to burn some time.
There were a lot of interesting things they could have done with the characters because I did some research into what the characters were like in the comics. And they touch on this briefly in the film, but the overuse of the PIM particles in the comics, at least it drastically changed the brain chemistry and personalities of the people who use suits.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, we see Hank Pym in the comics develop multiple personalities, and that's where we get the different suits that he creates. He creates Leviathan, Giant Man. He creates he even created a version of the Wasp suit for himself.
See, now that's something interesting that is something that you don't normally see.
Right, and instead of seeing Hank Pym, the complicated scientist, we see him as a bad father and a complicated scientist in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I know, and you're bogged down with 25 minutes of, you lied about how mom died.
And it could have made interesting drama for Corey Stoll's character, Darren Cross. Mm-hmm. It's briefly mentioned, no, Darren, it's the particles altering your brain chemistry.
Right.
And granted, I mean, Stoll and Douglas are very talented actors, so it's easy. Their tension and drama is very palpable.
Yeah.
We can sense there's something going on, but it would have been great to explore some of that in greater detail in this film, and we don't get that.
I know. I guess the writers or whatever, they just struggle from that Marvel having crappy villains, you know? He was just another one where he had potential, but it was all a wash. Particularly once they gave away that he's just this lunatic with, I don't know how anyone could watch that montage of like the Wasp killing or what was it? The Yellow Jacket murdering in cartoon. Video.
Right. How are people cool with that?
We're saving undeveloped countries by. It's like, what?
It's like, hey, remember that a couple centuries ago when we had the whole ideas of imperialism and colonization? Here's something that's going to make all that easier again.
This is literally a video of the Nazis saying Heil Hitler. And everyone's like, that's a really good idea. I don't see any problem with that at all.
If the film does take a stance on the technology portion, it's Hank Pym saying, no, Darren, don't use the technology for this.
Use it for this.
Yeah, use it to shrink down in between keyholes and to communicate with ants.
Because that's what we need.
That Yellow Jacket suit is cool, minus the whole, you know, murder implements.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought, too, especially when he's big size. And he's like, he looks pretty evil when he takes Scott's daughter and
right.
all that. But then once they shrink him down and he's firing his cute little lasers on the train set and everything, that it's pretty adorable watching them fight. I do have to say, that was the emotion I felt. I just loved when it was the train coming up. They're like, the bloop.
Corey Stoll's got like the best murder screams.
He does. He does.
He is dying horribly when Scott shrinks in between the atoms and messes up that suit, and he is in agony, and he is being crushed further down like a California raisin.
That poor man. But He was an evil prick, so
right.
I didn't care. He literally tried to kill his daughter. Like, what a douchebag. Yeah, goes like, to his house and takes his kid.
It's like, what do you have against, you know, Scott? You barely know him.
Maybe it was just because, you know, Hank wasn't a father figure to him. So he's like, if I can't have a father, no one can. Or maybe the bug zapper got to his brain. Maybe
that really messed him up even more.
He smelled too many fried mosquitoes.
They had this is still back when the MCU had a great big problem with their villains,
mm-hmm.
and really
well, they still do.
Really, the well, I would
other
disagree
than Thanos.
With that. Well, there was Thanos, Jake Gyllenhaal, Mysterio was pretty good.
Mysterio was pretty decent, yeah.
Well, Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger was great.
But could you say that he's the actual villain?
Killmonger?
Yeah, because people say that he's
not
the villain.
Colonialism is the villain in Black Panther.
That's what I mean. So it's like, was he... I don't associate
him. Darren Cross is a very, like, bland kind of villain. The most villainous thing he does is take somebody... You know, he vaporizes somebody in the executive bathroom, wipes him up with a napkin, and drops him in the toilet.
I know. He still drops him in the toilet.
Right. That's really the most villainous thing he does in the film.
Well, and he kills a bunch of sheep or lambs.
Oh, my God.
He just continuously vaporizes. I like how he vaporizes one, and then he's like, bring in the next. I'm like, you're not going to tinker?
Don't you need a breather to deal with the fact that you just killed an itty-bitty baby lamb?
No, he doesn't care. He's just this mindless Mongol.
Right, and even Hope's like, I thought we were using mice. He's like, what's the difference? Like, it really, there's a big difference.
Sheep are adorable.
Right. Mice are cheap.
Mice are economically affordable.
Or use skunks.
Skunks? Do you know how smelly that would be?
Well, if you're vaporizing them down to like orange marmalade, what's the difference?
Right? Then it smells.
Then it's just like, oh, well, that's just one less skunk.
I guess, but I bet that room
if you're in a hermetically sealed environment, it doesn't matter.
Where nose
it's not like that smell's getting to the outside.
Oh, that's true. That's how you could kill someone. Just put them in the torture room. You're in timeout. Smell the skunk. My nose. So he was a meanie.
He was a meanie. And then this whole love story they tried to shoehorn in with Hope Van Dyne and Scott.
I was just...
I mean, there is that quick glance she has over him like, he got ripped in jail.
All that work that Paul Rudd did for that 1 3-second long scene with his shirt off. All that work.
Ant-Man is not my first image when I think of a buff superhero. It's like Batman, Superman, Captain America, somebody. I mean, even Iron Man could probably let himself go a little bit because, you know, he's in the suit. It's the suit.
Or Robert Downey Jr. does. He's only buff for like the first, I think, 1.5 films.
Right.
And then he's got like a little belly the last.
That's because he doesn't need to be buff.
No, he doesn't. And he's like, I will fix it in post. Just put some CGI abs on me. But I agree with you. With their relationship was a little lackey. It just felt a little like I wish they would have. They seemed like they forced the conflict between them as opposed to like focusing maybe on his kid and his ex-wife and the fiance, because that was like given. That's the first conflict we get in the first 10 minutes. And it's like, wait, we're just going to write this off for his wife, ex-wife telling him just to pay child support and get a job and the fiance that screws with him every once in a while.
Mm.
It just, to me, it was a little sad. Was happy, though, that the fiancé cop wasn't a douchebag stepfather. Because we see that in so many movies.
For like 90% of the film, he is.
Well, he cares.
To Scott, at least.
Well, to Scott, but he still cares about the kid, what, Cassie?
Yeah, the cutest little kid in the MCU.
Yeah.
Until Tony Stark's daughter came around.
Oh, that's right. I forgot what she looks. I don't know.
Morgan. Itty-bitty five-year-old.
She was in the film for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, but she blackmails her dad into giving her juice pops.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Okay, well.
It was a long film, man.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's beside the point. Although, this is a segment we haven't done in a while. I did find something courtesy of the Goof section on IMDb.
Okay.
Are you ready for the return of this week in Toxic Fandom?
Oh, I found a couple, too. Oh.
So, courtesy of several internet pedants, ICBMs do not fly in level flight patterns as shown in the film. The missile is propelled into a low Earth orbit, goes into a steep arc, then descends upon its target. It doesn't fly in a level altitude at any point from its launch to its landing. The 1978 film Superman shows the same error when its ballistic missiles are also launched.
I love how they quote Superman.
Right!
This has been happening for years!
Yeah, there's just like one protester outside of a movie studio be like, change ICBM flights!
We're sick of it!
Security's just like, that guy's back again.
Can you please get him away? Put a donut stand out there. Drive by with an right. ice cream truck. Make him chase after it. Well, I got one for this week at Toxic Fandom.
Oh, boy.
It says at around an hour and 26 minutes, in the final fight scene involving Ant-Man, Hope, Darren Cross, and his henchmen in the laboratory, the ants can be seen holding back the hammer on the pistols that the henchmen are using, stopping them from firing. The pistols they were, in fact, using are Glocks, which are striker-fired and do not have an external hammer. This concept is clever and would have worked better with different pistols.
I love how they explained, like, that this would work better with such and such pistols. Like, meh.
Because they use the Glocks.
Really? You're looking for things that make sense in an MCU / Disney film?
It's actually quoted twice. Two people quoted that where they're like, yeah, they keep making clock sons of guns being cocked, but obviously there was no hammer, so there's nothing to stop. That's a double wrong.
All the gun pit ants are just like, ah!
Dude, there was like three gun pit ants. They were even mad when he got on the plane when they're like really small in the helicopter, when Scott's running across like the gun that's being shot, they said because the barrel doesn't move. That's
oh my gosh, people.
They're like, he actually wouldn't be able to run across it. He would be jettisoned into the air if a real weapon fired that someone was running on.
I wish people would just be able to enjoy the movies they watch instead of instantly going to the internet and be like, that wouldn't happen.
I really want to be there when someone sees that. What do they just pull out their laptop or their iPad? Their flip phone, just like type it in, sending message.
No, they have to push their glasses up to the bridge of their nose real quick before they angrily type away at the internet.
In their memoir.
Take a hit off their inhaler. Get permission from their incel clan whether or not it's okay to post this on IMDb.
You mean their vape?
Yeah, they got to get permission from their vape buddies.
Isn't that terrible? Just absurd.
Blah, blah, blah. Angry noises. Blah, blah, blah. So mad.
So thanks, Toxic Fans.
Well, speaking of all that, though, Sean, did you have your own lens flare for Ant-Man?
Yeah. My lens flare.
Lay it on me, buddy.
So my lens flare was the some of the poorly timed jokes. I felt like they were just theater jokes because when watching it by myself in my room in the dark.
Ooh.
At 3 a.m.
Oh, my.
Because that's what I do in my spare time.
I like where this is going.
I didn't laugh. I didn't.
Not once?
No, I laughed at all of T.I. and Pena's jokes. But just some of them with Paul Rudd, it really made me sad because he's so funny. And just like the moment with Hope and her dad, they're like having a moment and he's like, wow, this is great. You see that? Real healing time. Ah. Is it the wrong moment? I was like,
yeah, Scott, it's the wrong moment.
No crap, it's the wrong moment. I mean, to me, that was just like a theater joke. So I just feel like if you're going to do comedy in a film, maybe do comedy that resonates outside of the theater, you know, where it's timeless and like Back to the Future, you know, Doc and Marty, the jokes that they say and they do, their situations are always funny, no matter how old, because it's good stuff. So that kind of bothered me. How about you?
There's the scene after Scott gets the suit for the first time. So okay. He shrinks for the very first time and he hides in the shower because he doesn't want his friends to find out about the suit. And then Luis comes into the bathroom looking for him. And then he turns on the tub to do what exactly?
Yeah, I know.
All that action does is just set up the gag of Scott seeing the world from the ant's point of view. And there is absolutely no reason for Luis to turn on the tub. And we get some type of context. Like, I don't know if Luis is, like, going to go drop a deuce or if he's going to take a shower. We see him you know, his belt falls on the floor. Scott goes, I don't want to see that.
Maybe.
Just runs away into the all-night, all-week dance party that's going on in his building.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There was the party. It's like, what the heck? It's,
like, why aren't people more upset at that?
It's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Why is there a dance break?
Because those people are jerks.
Because they're going hard. Maybe they work night jobs.
You know, all they had to do, all like either Luis or Kurt, Dave or Scott, all they had to do was just take a 2x4 and drill it into the door frame. That way they couldn't get out of the apartment.
That's it.
That's it. That's all they had to do.
Alas. This, you know,
another page from the Rupp family book of revenge. My dad actually did that to somebody.
Are you serious?
Yeah. He and my mom, when they first got married, they lived in an apartment building, and across the hall from them, they had somebody who constantly had parties in the all hours of the day and night. And my dad's always had this habit of getting up early, like super early, like 4 a.m. to go to work. So every hour of sleep he can get is precious to him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my dad being my dad, he wasn't always the angry person he is. I still love my dad, though. He, you know, he went across the hall to talk to this person, say, hey, can you, you know, keep it down, not have these parties? I have to work late and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the guy being the jerk he was didn't. Let's just say he declined to acquiesce to this request.
Wow.
So my dad decided to take the drill from his apartment and get a 2x4, and he drilled it into the door frame so they couldn't get out of the apartment. And the fire department had to come, and they had to take out the 2x4 in the door and everything. And the police came and interviewed my dad. So he messed up his hair to make it seem like he had just woken up. And like, oh, hey, do you know anything about that? What happened to your neighbor? He goes, no, I don't know.
Maybe that case is still open, Chris.
I doubt it. Okay, as a fireman walking into that, and like, if you interview the other neighbors and they say like, oh yeah, he has parties all the time, the cops are just like, well, we know what happened here.
This douchebag.
The guy had it coming. Someone was going to do that to him at some point.
Your dad is awesome.
My dad is awesome.
See, defacement of public property. All we needed was theft in this movie.
Win the world. When you need to get back at your bad neighbors, call on one man.
Drill a 2x4 in the door.
Right. What about a red shirt, Sean? Did you have one?
Oh, my red shirt was the guy in the helicopter that goes down, or I guess gets shot with the little mini lasers, because his whole freaking purpose was to play The Cure. And then to have those that scene where Scott runs across. I'm like, why are you in the copter? He had no point other than to show the cool effects.
Right.
So that was why I was going to say the sheep, but I figured you're going to say the sheep.
Yeah. Is it any surprise? Subject 35A, the little itty bitty lamb, yeah, is my red shirt of the movie.
No.
No reason to kill that cute little lamb.
No. No, it did not.
I mean, God knows how many other sheep they could, because they're on subject 35A.
Yeah.
There's 26 letters in the alphabet.
Oh, my God. That monster of a man.
So many dead sheep.
That's so many. I feel like
that's too many.
That's too expensive. How much does the price of sheep go now?
Right.
How much is it running? I'm going to Google this.
For how much you're spending to get those test subjects for for your shrinking tech, you could spend that money on a therapist to work out your daddy issues with Hank Pym.
Right? That's too much.
It's too much money to spend.
I mean, oh, wow. Ah, well, actually, it's not too bad. Too bad. I mean, it's...
Still, you just have
to... pay between $40 to $75 for an ordinary common sheep.
But you still have to deal with the fact that you killed an itty-bitty baby lamb.
That is true. Or, who knows if he was using purebred. Because that's 275 to 400. So let's, like, the math alone.
Given there's 26 letters in the alphabet and they're already on number 35, I doubt they're using the purebred sheep.
No, that's crazy. These guys are spending well over, like, oh my God. If it was, dude, if it was $400 per sheep, by the time they hit, that's like, Jesus Christ. They're spending like $10,000 just for one letter. To go through all one number to go through all the
elf. Oh my.
No, that he should have done mice. So much cheaper.
Right.
No, there's where their budget went. That's probably why they couldn't make other jackets.
Right. Well, let's discuss the legacy of Ant-Man, shall we?
Sure.
So this film was a massive success in 2015, grossed over $500 million at the box office.
Ooh.
But it didn't even crack the top 10 in terms of highest gross of that year.
How is that possible?
Well, here are the list of other films that came out that year, and you'll see why. The Force Awakens.
Oh, yeah.
Jurassic World.
Huh?
Furious 7. Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Minions. Spectre.
Oh, my God.
Inside Out. Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, The Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 2, and The Martian all made more money than Ant-Man did.
It's just crazy.
That was a great year for movies, though.
That was a good year for movies.
And like we mentioned, this also came out on the heels of Avengers Age of Ultron. So the anticipation was high for this movie, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe was the box office draw. It still is in a lot of respects. Currently holds an 83% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and as well as a 64% on Metacritic.
Ooh.
Metacritic seems a tad low, given the rabid fan base of the MCU.
I'd give it like rabid fan. I would give it like a 73,
right,
maybe 74.
Right, I think that'd be a bit more fair.
Yeah,
it was nominated for a ton of Saturn Awards, including Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress, Best Actor, Best Director, and Best Film Editing. It did win. It managed to win Best Comic to Film Motion Picture, beating out Age of Ultron and The Kingsman from that year.
That's crazy, because Kingsman was great, and I know Age of Ultron gets a lot of poo-poo, but I actually like that.
Yeah, film. Age of Ultron is really good. I don't get why people poo-poo on it.
I think because it was the last dark-ish film that Marvel Cinematic Universe did, and then they're like, all right, let's make this for kids.
That's sequel rules, though. If you're going to go with a sequel, you go dark on the second film.
Well, yeah.
That's what you do.
When it comes up, when we review it, we'll talk the crap out of it.
Yeah. Obviously, it is part of the MCU, and Ant-Man and Paul Rudd have become one of its tentpole franchises / characters heading into phase 4 of films. It did spawn a sequel, obviously, that came out in 2018 titled Ant-Man and the Wasp, and a third film in the series is currently in development, but there's no due date confirmed yet.
No.
But with San Diego Comic-Con coming up in a few months, I'm sure somebody's going to announce the release date of that.
Oh, yeah. They'll just keep on coming until these actors die.
Or their characters die.
Or their characters die. They'll keep me. I mean, I would. Crap, I'd...
It's a license to print money is what it is.
Oh, heck.
I don't fault Disney at all for making these films. I think Kevin Feige has a specific vision and message he wants to accomplish with these films. It's why it took us 22 films to get from Iron Man to Captain America saying Avengers Assemble in Endgame. And it was great. It's Endgame has the best payoffs of a lot of comic films.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to see Ant-Man as part of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know what? If you're an actor doing it, I mean, crap. Chris Evans did what? He did it for like 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
He became a multimillionaire after doing it. So,
and now he has the freedom to do any project he wants.
Exactly. He was jacked in his late 20s to 30s. Who knows how many women he met. And now his career's got clout. And he can
I'm Captain America. Do you want to sleep with me?
What a great pickup line. Not that he's Chris Evans.
There's only like two guys who can pull that off.
I don't know if that's Chris Evans. But yeah,
Chris Evans stunt double.
There we go. But so, he could do whatever he wants. So
let's rate this film, shall we?
Let's do it with our lovely scale of wouldn't watch, would watch, would own, and would host the grandiose viewing party. Chris Rupp, what would you rate Ant-Man?
You know, this is a film that I'd call a welcome tonic from the rest of the MCU. Most of the films are in that series are often so serious, with the stakes so high, you never have a chance to really catch your breath. And Ant-Man is nearly independent of the overall series, and while having a familiarity with the other films will certainly help, I don't think it's necessary to still enjoy this film. I think Michael Douglas is great in this mentor role, and I never really thought Paul Rudd was capable of pulling off a role like this. And while the technology shown in the film is certainly fantastical, I mean, really show me a Marvel film that doesn't take any sort of scientific liberties. The film is funny, It's entertaining. It manages to hit on a lot of emotional points. And for that, I'd call it a would host a viewing party.
Oh, wow. So we're going to disagree.
What do you give to Ant-Man?
So I think if you like the MCU and you're like a big fanboy, I think it's, you know, important to watch it. I would say for myself, I would recommend it for a first time go for people. I would just rate it as a would watch, you know, as I like darker films with a little bit more stance, flesh out of conflict. Kind of, you know, I hold the Christopher Nolan is always my go-to because it's those are what I believe is my favorite superheroes. But for this film, I would say it's a Marvel film. It's fast paced. Like you said, you have to go through a lot of surface level stuff to get for those little moments between like Michael Douglas and Darren. And I think it's got a lot of spectacle, a lot of good moments with the CGI, him shrinking, robbing the house. The comedy between the guys, I think, is really a lifesaver. Michael Pena, T.I., those guys are great in the film. But overall, I just think that it lacked on a lot of areas where they really could have fleshed out like his ex-wife and like that relationship or like really, instead of Disney-fying it, I really wish they would have like focused more on like him being a garbage human, because then as a viewers, we could have more identified with Paul Rudd, because you can identify, he at least has something going on, unlike Ray, but it's not too much. Thankfully, they fleshed him out later. So despite him being a Robin Hood-esque that got wrongly thrown in jail, I don't know. I just do it as like a wood watch. It's just, eh.
Okay.
It's something that, you know, I might throw on every
I get it.
If I do the whole like series or something.
But I get it. I love the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it's never one of those things I'm going to shove down somebody's throat.
No. It's not my, yeah. But it's decent film, you know, for kids and if you want to be entertained for a while.
Right.
So that's what I give it.
Marvel.
It is a film that I.
No, he went away for a little bit. he said his piece and he was gone.
He's coming back.
I'm sure he'll have something to say when we talk about our next film.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We better now, because now it's time to consult our friendly number generator. Major Samantha.
Yes, she's going to help us pick from our list of 118 films. And from that list, she has selected number 57. Is a film from 2017, directed by Rupert Sanders and starring Scarlett Johansson. It is Ghost in the Shell.
Oh, sweet. I've never seen this.
This is a good movie.
Yeah? Okay, I'm excited. I know it's based off of the comics. And I've really wanted to see this.
Yes.
So, yay!
Yeah. That'll be our film for next time. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. It really helps to drive us up the charts as well as help people like you find the show. We are across the spectrum of social media with Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at Force Fed Sci-Fi. You can check out and download episodes from Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you find podcasts. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Finally, you can check out our website, forcefedsci-fi.com, for show notes and links to all of our social media. So for all of us at the Force Fed Sci-Fi team, we will see you next time. Force Fed Sci-Fi is written and hosted by Sean Culp and Chris Rupp. Website design, associate producer, and editing by Jeremy Keske. Artwork designed by Mike Berger. Theme music composed and performed by Custom Anthem.